Hey, you guys having a good week? Welcome back to CSU. And how many of you guys threw a ball of fire some point this week? Yeah, there's a few of you. All right, come on, I think it was Wednesday night. Anybody play Capture the Flag Sunday night? A few more, yeah? I think we already asked, Cowboys? Anybody actually like a cowboy in here? Or cowgirl? Yeah, come on. Sid is totally cowgirl. Love it. So, hey, this time of the year is always a lot of fun for us. We're getting to meet a lot of new friends. We're getting to know a lot of new people. But people come in and they say, hey, what is Chi Alpha? I don't really know what that is and what that's about. Is that like a fraternity? Is that like some kind of like church? Is that some kind of social club? Like, what is Chi Alpha? And so, the simplest way I could say it, like the clearest way I could say that tonight is I could simply say that Chi Alpha is about Jesus, that we're Jesus people, that we're about following after this rabbi from Galilee, and that we have in our own lives been dramatically changed, transformed, and our lives have forever been redirected as a result of his lordship, his leadership, his authority, and his love in our lives. And so that, while that is in some ways the most accurate way that I could try to explain what we're about, it is also one of the most ambiguous ways I could explain who we are, because in our world, the idea of who is Jesus is very discombobulated. It's all over the place. You have, you know, you kind of have, you know, different political Jesuses. You know, you have Republican Jesus, you have Democrat Jesus. You know, you have hippie Jesus, hipster Jesus. We all know what he would be on Friday. But we come into this space, and in many ways, we are actually just making him into a caricature of our own values and ideals and sense of self. That you know, I didn't see it at Ramapalooza. Most years, they have, like, cartoonists going up there, and they'll draw you, and I don't know if they did. Were they there this week? Yeah. Okay. So what is a caricature? It's something where, like, you look at it and you're like, I can see myself in it, but they're over accentuating some things and they're minimizing other attributes of you to kind of make it funny. But that's what we do with Jesus. We overemphasize certain things. We kind of like the things we like. We double down on that. We kind of over-accentuate that. And we minimize these other things. Oh, I don't like that about him. I don't like this about him. So we kind of minimize those things. And what we get is sort of like there's something of truth in there. There's something there. But it's not the real Jesus. It's a caricature of the true Jesus. But it's not the authentic Jesus. So what does it mean to be a Jesus follower if we don't even know who Jesus is? And so my very humble attempt tonight is to start us this semester saying, let's stop saying, Jesus, this is who you are, and let's ask Jesus on Wednesday nights when we're together here, Jesus, who do you say you are? Stop trying to define it for yourself based on your perception. One of the greatest challenges that I can give a student, one of the most radical, challenging questions is, will you let Jesus define himself to you? Because if you let him define himself to you, then he will inevitably define you as a result. And that could be a little scary at times. And he will define what you believe and how you value and what you see in the world. But are you willing to let the real Jesus come out? And so we're doing this series. We're starting this semester looking at these moments in the Gospels, in the stories of Jesus, where he says, I am, dot, dot, dot. And so tonight, we are going to be going into John chapter 6. And if you have your Bible, awesome. If you don't, feel free to download an app real quick or just Google it. But John chapter 6, it's this guy who followed Jesus for years, and then he would write a story about Jesus years later. And in John chapter 6, verse 29, it says, Jesus answered, talking to this crowd, it says, the work of God is this, to believe in the one he sent. So they asked him, what sign then will you give that we may see it and believe you? What will you do? Our ancestors ate the manna in the wilderness. As it is written, he gave them bread from heaven to eat. Right? This is, you know, the idea like, oh, God, give me a sign. It's nothing new. Jesus was dealing with it back then, too. They were just like, prove it. Prove it to us. And so Jesus said, very truly I tell you, it's not Moses who has given you the bread from heaven, but it is my Father who gives you the true bread from heaven. For the bread of God is the bread that comes down from heaven and gives life to the world. Sir, they said, always give us this bread. Then Jesus declared, I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me will never go hungry, and whoever believes in me will never be thirsty. But as I told you, you have seen me, and still you do not believe. Now, they kind of grumble about this. They're like, hey, we know where you're from. We know your parents. We knew your dad. We know your mom. We know your siblings. Like, from heaven? What is that? That just seems weird, right? So they kind of grumble about it. But if we jump down to verse 45, it says, it is written in the prophets, they will all be taught by God. Everyone who has heard the Father and learned from him comes to me. No one has seen the Father except the one who is from God. Only he has seen the Father. Very truly I tell you, the one who believes has eternal life. I am the bread of life. Your ancestors ate the manna in the wilderness, yet they died. But here is the bread that comes down from heaven, which anyone may eat and not die. I am the living bread that came down from heaven. Whoever eats this bread will live forever. This bread is my flesh, which I will give for the life of the world. So the question often comes up, like, why are we following after a guy from 2,000 years ago? What relevance does that have as a college student, as a CSU student, as a modern American or maybe an international student in a foreign country? What relevance does that have to my life, to my reality, to my way of thinking? But here is just a couple thoughts that I want to just try to pull out for us, that we kind of understand what Jesus is saying when he says, hey, I'm the bread of life. And one of the things that Jesus is saying is this: I am the bread of life means he is where life finds fulfillment. Every one of you, every college student is asking, what satisfies? What fulfills? You're here because in some ways you have enough ambition in your heart to try to make a move towards that idea. Like, what is going to give, you know, maybe that relationship, maybe that career choice, maybe that friendship, maybe my family, maybe, you know, what is going to give me a sense of fulfillment in my life? What is going to give me a sense of purpose to my life? What is going to give my life meaning and significance in my life? And we're all searching for that. We're all asking that question. As college students, you're always kind of in that phase of like wrestling through that question. And how you answer that question will dramatically affect the destiny of your heart and your life. And so here is Jesus, and what he is saying is, he is saying, I am the bread of life. What he is saying is, I am that place where you can find life. Contrary to the cultural perception that says you can either seek for fulfillment or faith in your life, but they don't work together. Like, you can have a miserable, faith-filled life or a fun, you know, fulfilled life. It's either or. One is just illogical. I mean, honestly, it's kind of a lazy interpretation of the world. I adhere more to, like, I'm more respectful of the person who says, I just don't believe God exists, because at least then you can say, okay, because if God exists, if God is real, then he has to be that place as your creator, that place where, what does your humanity mean? What is fulfillment? What is purpose? What is meaning? What is the value of your life? That is the intuitive outflow of God, who he is, and who is he to you? Because if he is real, then to pursue after him is to find, what does it mean to be human? And what does it mean to find fulfillment as one? C.S. Lewis often said, well, he said it this way, C.S. Lewis, if some of you guys may have read, anybody ever read the Narnia books when you were a kid? Yeah. So he was kind of this fiction writer. He was this fiction writer back after World War II, but he was kind of this guy that was really prolific writer. He was also kind of a theologian, popularized a lot of theological discussions and questions. But he wrote this book called The Weight of Glory, and in the keystone chapter of that book, and my students have been around here for a while, you've heard me quote this because it's just one of my favorites from him, but it said, it would seem that our Lord finds our desires not too strong, but too weak. We are half-hearted creatures fooling about with drink and sex and ambition when infinite joy is offered to us. Like an ignorant child who wants to go on making mud pies in a slum because he can't imagine what is meant by the offer of a holiday at the sea, we are far too easily pleased. Right? So you know, I remember in college, for me, I was a fraternity guy, loved my fraternity brothers. I was a football player. I was really more of a tackle dummy. I'm not trying to make myself sound bigger than, you know, a bigger deal than I was. But I had lots of friends. I was in a lot of social circles. I had lots of connections. But you know what's funny is if what binds you? What binds you in your life to other people? If what binds you is something surface level, then your friendship is surface level. You know, if the keg is all that's drawing you to each other, then as long as the keg is tapped, that's about as far as it goes. When it's done, that's about as deep as the friendship was. Right? But I remember, like, when I was in college, the friends that I still have to this day, and I found friends in lots of different contexts, but the thing that bound us together was faith, because our faith actually drew us deeper. It was where we found fulfillment in the friendship through our faith. That relationship, will you find fulfillment there? Well, no, but through God, you will find that relationship has more depth and more sweetness and more truth to it. That career, I remember we have one of the girls that's here, her brother was one of the greatest cross-country runners here at CSU. He beat most of the school records, was at the Olympic trials this last go around. He was a student for us for years. And I remember when him and his small group leader kind of shared with me a little bit about how one of the things that changed for him was in the middle of his like running career here at CSU, we had been talking so much about just like identity. He realized I don't have to validate myself by winning. And because I didn't have to validate myself, I could run for the joy of it. Maybe for the first time, actually enjoying it for its own sake, not needing something more from it, nothing greater than just the fact that I ran for the joy of it. And he said it made me grittier. It wasn't that he didn't enjoy running, he finally found joy in running, and he's now a professional runner, right? It deepened his career, So, you know, where do you find your fulfillment? In that career, in that relationship, in that friendship? Through Christ, he is calling us to something greater. It's through Christ that true fulfillment is found. Without him, everything is more shallow. It's more unreal. It's less true. It's like a vague reflection. It's a copy of a copy of something that once maybe was true. It becomes a caricature of what real relationship looks like, what real authentic work looks like and joy looks like. But if God is real and Jesus is saying, hey, I came from heaven to bring you life, to be the bread of life, then he is calling us into discovery of what is authentic. I remember Timothy Keller puts it this way once. He said, in the day-to-day trenches of adult life, Keller is this pastor in New York, ministers to a lot of people from a lot of different backgrounds and beliefs, but he's ministering, and he says, there is no such thing, no matter who you are, there is no such thing as not worshiping. Everybody worships. The only choice we get is what do we worship? If you worship money and things, if they are where you tap real meaning in life, then you will never have enough, never feel you have enough. Worship your own body and beauty and sexual allure, and you will always feel ugly. And when time and age start showing, you will die a million deaths before they finally plant you. Worship power, you will end up feeling weak and afraid, and you'll need ever more power over others to keep the fear at bay. Worship your intellect, being seen as smart, you will end up feeling stupid, a fraud, always on the verge of being found out. And so here is Jesus, and he's saying, there's something greater, guys. There's something more. There is a fulfillment that comes through me. There's a better way. But where will you strive for your satisfaction? Where will you strive for true meaning? The other thing that when Jesus says, I am the bread of life, the other thing that he's getting at is this idea that belief isn't the point. Now, some of you guys right now are like, Nate, literally that first verse you read tonight said believe, as if that were the point. And it is true that it is belief, but what kind of belief? See, they keep talking about both Jesus and the crowds keep talking about this story about manna in the desert. Well, you can actually find that story in Exodus chapter 16. It's in the Old Testament. It's after Israel had fled from Egypt. God had delivered them from their slavery. They were in the desert, and God was trying to lead them to the promised land. But while they were in the desert, there was this question that they kept wrestling with. Is he worth it? Is he trustworthy? Is he where I can find my sense of purpose? Can we trust him that he has a destiny? It was so much better in Egypt in slavery, right? It was always better back then. Like this, now we don't even have food. And so God gives them bread. And Exodus defines it, it calls it bread multiple times, but it's this bread that appears in the dew of the morning. It's like dew, and they go out every day and they gather enough for that day, twice before Sunday or Saturday. But the point is they do this thing so that they can like go through the desert. You know, over a million people, a lot of commentators say, and they're going through the deserts. How are they going to feed themselves? Well, God provides. But the point is, are they going to trust him? And trust means more than like, hey, I believe you exist. Because a lot of Westerners think, well, I'm good, I believe in God, it'll all work itself out. As if that's the point. Actually, one of the followers of Jesus would say, you know, belief without doing anything about it is lame. He said, works without deeds is dead. It has no meaning. It has no significance. You believe in God and do nothing about it? What good is that? It means nothing. But when Jesus here is saying believe, he's talking about Israel in the desert, and he's saying, will you move with me? Will you follow me? Will you trust me to be the fulfillment of your life, to direct your life, to guide your life? Because I'm trying to lead you to the promised land, but there are going to be bumps on the road, and I'm going to have to lead you out of a lot of things that you're comfortable with and you feel safe at. And even though it's destroying you and killing you and entrapping you, it is the thing that you will constantly run back to unless you understand that I am life. Because the thing that he says is not, hey, I have a great philosophy. I have a great morality. I have a great religion for you. He said, I have a person for you to get to know. I'm inviting you into that. And yeah, it affects morality. You know, Jesus says, all the commands boil down to love God, love your neighbor. But how do you love God? Well, let me help you. Let me show you. Let me teach you. How do I love other people? Like, well, let me give you some advice. Let me give you some wisdom. That's what we call morality in Christianity. It's how do I love the way that God loves and calls us to express to one another. But all of those things boil down to God pointing us to a person. Love is a relational concept, and we have a relational God inviting us into relationship with himself. That's the point. We have a relational God. But some of you guys might still be like, well, okay, what do I think about? I don't know if I even believe at the beginning. Like believe, meaning like if you believe, I'll follow you. Belief that leads to following after Jesus. That's why the disciples at the end of this chapter, if you keep reading, they actually, all the crowds leave him because they're like, this is a hard teaching. Who can, you know, listen to this? This doesn't make any sense to us. And Jesus goes up to the disciples and said, what about you guys? And they're like, well, we believe. And the context seems to suggest that they don't even understand, but they just believe in him. They trust him. They're like, who else has the words of life, Peter says. He's like, we will follow you. We will follow after you. Because they believed because they followed and obeyed. And so, you guys, this semester, you guys are defining, whether this is your first year or your fifth year, this is a moment. Every year is a moment to say, okay, what am I going to be about? What is my life going to be about? What is my faith about? And am I just somebody who does life and kind of tags on faith, or is it through faith that I find the fulfillment and all of these other things? But belief isn't the point, guys. It's that relationship with God. It's that surrender to a God who says, hey, I'm a king. I'm a Lord. I'm the one that will give you fulfillment and where you will find purpose. But if you're at that place, you might even be saying, though, I don't know. I don't even know if I believe in God. And let me just throw a couple thoughts to you tonight. And Andrew, you might open up that back door. I don't know if you guys feel it. It's a little hot in here. A little hot. Fort Collins. Don't worry. December's coming. You're going to be like, oh, that first week was so glorious in the outpost. Now it's 10 degrees outside. Okay, so Watchman Nee. Watchman Nee was this Christian Chinese writer, early 1900s. And a number of people wrote about this. He was one of the first, though. And he basically said, there's really only three options about with God. There's only really three options you have when it comes to belief in God, what you can do. Either you could say Jesus is a lunatic or a liar or a Lord. There's only three options. Right? What's that? It went really fast. You can backtrack, Andrew. I'm going to go one more time. One. All right. So if he is, let's say, a liar. Let's say Jesus, let's say he's a liar. Okay? You have to come to terms with a couple of things. One, you have to come to terms with the fact that the most influential person in all of human history, I don't care if you believe he's God or not, you'd be hard-pressed to find a historian who would argue otherwise. The most influential person in history is a liar. That has influenced more culture, more people, more societies, the direction of our world in more positive ways than any other person in history was a liar. You have to go with that. But more than just that, you even have to go even further than that, because you also have to admit that not only is he a liar, but what kind of liar is willing to die for their lie? A lot of people are willing to die, you know, or to live for a lie if it gives them power or money or position. A lot of people are willing to live for a lie. But if he was trying to live for that, those kind of things, he would have totally done this story different, because at the end of the story, the crowds leave him. They try to make him king at the beginning of this story. And we'll get to that here in a second, but the feeding of the 5,000 happened right before this interaction. And they try to make him king. He said he basically like started talking in a way that just kind of ran them all off. He wasn't looking for power, and he was saying some things throughout this passage that are just kind of wacky. He's like, you have to eat my flesh and drink my blood, otherwise you can't enter the kingdom of heaven. And they're all like, what? In hindsight, they're like, oh, okay, now we get it. But he knew he was coming to die. He knew he was coming to die, but what kind of liar would do that? Well, you could say, no, it can't be a liar, but maybe he was a lunatic. Maybe he was just out of his mind, saying he's from heaven, proclaiming that, you know, that his death would save humanity. Like, maybe he was just out of it, totally a liar. Not just a liar, but he was a lunatic. He really believed it, but he just was out of his mind. But again, there's a couple of things that you have to come to terms with if you're willing to go down that road. And if you think that he was just a lunatic, again, one of the most salient teachers, one of the most poignant teachers in all of human history, one of the ones who elevated the poor, the oppressed, opposed the classes that were suppressing other people, elevated women in a way, like all of these kind of things. And he elevated these people. And yet, this was a lunatic talking? Like, crowds gathered, wrestling. And they mostly wrestled, not because of what he taught, although in this context, he would kind of like force them, like, are you following me for the right reasons? Because they started following him because of what, they just wanted him to feed them. Give him, you know, a miracle. He had just done a miracle. But the miracles of Jesus oftentimes point to a greater reality. Oftentimes people say, like, oh, miracles can't happen, which puts a premise before the conclusion. It says, well, if God is real, miracles make perfect sense. But if God isn't real, then sure, miracles can't happen. The natural order can't be disrupted. But if God is real, then miracles make perfect sense. I remember one of the girls in our ministry for years, Danny, she came into our ministry, she had scoliosis. She had a severe scoliosis. She said it was a daily pain, that her back was just so contorted out of place. And it was a number of our students that just said, hey, can we pray for you? And she said, okay. Prayed for her. She didn't feel the pain the next week. So she went to the doctor. They went, did x-rays. She has them before and after x-rays. She's like, everything's fine. Everything aligned. I always want to say straight as an arrow, but that's not right, because that would be another problem. But it was, you know, it was the way that it was designed. Right? Like, God fed the 5,000 right before this, which was, amongst other things, this like helping those who couldn't survive, who couldn't live, who were like starving. He calms the seas and nature that from it being destructive. He heals a woman who is bleeding and is an outcast of her society and brings her to right. It's not that God distorts reality in miracles, but he's actually showing reality through his miracles. He's showing a greater reality. He's showing the kingdom's reality, something greater than what we know without him. But to say that he is a lunatic is actually almost goes even a little further. I'll give you just a quick thought, food for thought. We'll keep moving here. But food for thought, if he says, believe in me, and you say, you're a lunatic, miracles can't happen. God's, I don't know if he's real or not. If God isn't real, then I don't know. I love this stuff. So if you're not into that, just hold off for 30 seconds. I promise I'll move on. But if God is not real, you don't even have a choice. There is no choice. Because the only way that you could even choose to believe in God is if God is real. What do I mean? If the world is a closed system without God, if there is nothing to this world other than causality, if causality reigns, then there is nothing in nature that would justify you having any choice. You're simply a combination of internal systems and processes and predispositions and external factors and variables and external conditions that are playing on you to give you this perception of choice or self. You don't even have self. And so you're destined to whatever you think, believe, and do. So don't be offended that I believe that God is real, because I actually think that I actually choose to believe that he is real. If you say God isn't real, then you have no basis to even say that that's a thing. You're just fizzing over there. Your brain is just kind of acting in ways totally independent of anything that is you, because there is no such thing as you. An indifferent universe that will eventually die, a cold, indifferent death, and your life will have no meaning, purpose, or value, and no significance. But God came and he said, you are so significant to me that I came down from heaven to rescue you and save you and have relationship with you and show you what fulfillment looks like and show you what belief means. But you have to follow me. So you can either say, well, he was a lunatic, he was a liar, or you have to admit, he's Lord. And if he's Lord, then belief is more than just like an intellectual subscription. That's lazy Christianity. It's not even really Christianity. Because Christianity is always following Christ. When we say we're Jesus followers, we mean something more than just like, yeah, I can write that on a test next Friday if you give it to me. What did Jesus say here, here, and here? What do we believe? You know, that's fine. That's good. It's part of it. You have to know somebody that you're trying to have a relationship with. But is it more? Last thought here, and we'll wrap up here, but John 10:10, later in that gospel, John would write how Jesus would articulate, the thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I came so that they would have life and have it abundantly. See, right before this story is the story of the feeding of the 5,000, and it's an interesting observation. There's a very few stories that are in all three of the Gospels, or all four of the Gospels, sorry. There's a number that are in three, but there's very few stories that are in all four. You know, Jesus' crucifixion, for example. This story of the feeding of the 5,000 is actually one of them, which sounds cool. He took a few fish and a few loaves, and he fed 5,000 people, maybe 20,000 people, depending on different commentators. But what? Why is that a big deal? Why is that? I mean, that's great, you know, but raising Lazarus from the dead? I mean, come on, right? Like, I mean, there's walking on water. That's you know, horse tooth. Come on, guys, let's go up there. That's fun. Friday, hang out, you know, we're just going to hang out, walking on water. I mean, why feeding? Why food, you know? And here is one of the things that's really interesting, is that when Jesus fed these 5,000, a lot of commentators have mentioned that he was in a place where revolutions would often spring out. This is where revolutions would be birthed. He was going to the countryside, literally, you know, a lot of the Jewish people there, this is where they would like stir, they would become, to the Romans, they would become radicalized in that idea, that they were people that were just, this is where you would go for a revolution. And Jesus shows up and he proclaims, basically, I'm even greater than Moses. I'm the one who is actually giving you bread, turning it, doing a miracle here. Like, and they're like, hey, this is how we're gonna see freedom from our Roman rule and all these things. So they're looking for a king. They, in fact, try to make him king. They try to force it. Like, you become king. Because what they want is them to become king, and their ambition for whatever ruler is for them, for him to do what they want. But he doesn't want to do what they want. So he's like, no, I'm not going to be your king. I'm not going to be your puppet. If I'm king, then I choose. And what I choose is a different way. Because revolutions start with a radical moment that leads to rebellion, bloodshed. You know, the next thing that should have happened is Jesus handed out, you know, swords and bows, and they should have stormed the gates of the Roman Empire. Instead, Jesus says, here's some bread. And remember, this is a generation of people where, like, that was what they spent most of their day doing. Day in, day out, they were constantly looking for, like, calories. You know what I think of when I read bread? Calories. You know, pizza on Friday night. Like, I don't think much about it. But to them, that was life. The average lifespan was much shorter back then, and it was largely because they were striving for food. And bread was this representation of life because it was where they found food. But Jesus says, hey, I'm the life. Not death, but life. But to do that is going to take death. And Jesus, when he took the bread, he would break it and he would bless it. And he would break it and he would bless it. And then the miracle would happen. And it's in the Greek, it's the same words as later Mark, I believe, is the one where he would talk in his Last Supper with his disciples. And it says that he broke and he blessed, saying, this is my body given to you. This is my blood shed for you. And the revolutionary would go in that next season, the next couple of days, would experience suffering like unlike anything we could have ever imagined, and death, but then new life. But it started with a God who says, I've come to give you new life, to give you fulfillment, to the thing that you long for, the thing that you're striving for, the thing that you're desiring in your heart for. I'm coming to give that to you. But it is going to take death, but it's not going to be the death of our enemies and of these political leaders or of this government. It's going to be my death. I'm going to start this revolution. And that's what they understood. They understood he was proclaiming revolution. But he would leave and he would go. And it says that he forgave. He said, Father, forgive them, the people who crucified him. Father, forgive them. Meaning what? He blessed them. He broke and he blessed. He blessed and he broke. And he blessed them. He forgave them. They don't know what they're doing. Father, forgive them. I want a future with them. I want a hope for them. I want a destiny even for them. And then he broke and he died so that you could have life. And so if you're at that place this semester, just kind of like, man, I need to figure out who is God and what do I believe about this? And not just believe in the sense of like, yeah, I can adhere to like that philosophy or that theology or that worldview or that religion, but to say, like, will I obey? Because he didn't say, hey, just subscribe to me. He said, you have to take it in. And actually, that what he's talking about is the manna in Exodus chapter 16. And God said, you only have enough for today. Some of you guys proclaim to be followers of Jesus, but you haven't been taking in any bread for a long time. It's been a while. You know, that's like saying, hey, I had some really good bread last semester. Cool. Are you still alive? How? And for throughout Israel's story, they would throughout the deserts every day, and then enough for their day off so they wouldn't have to work. But every day they would have to take more in. And some of you guys are like, yeah, I subscribe, I believe, but you're not following because you're not taking him in. You're not finding your fulfillment in him. You're not finding that place of peace and satisfaction, the overcoming the fear and the anxiety in your hearts, that spiritual warfare or that oppression that you feel, that societal situation, that trauma that you went through. Those things are overcoming you. They define you, and you have not let God in. You have not let life in. But he's saying, hey, there's a better way. Would you let me give you life? And so tonight, this is just how we're going to do it. There's a lot of leaders here, a lot of small group leaders here tonight. And I know we got a number of, you know, new friends here tonight too. And so I just want to invite you, get together just for a couple minutes. We're not going to do something very long here. But for just a couple minutes, I just want to invite you to get around, find somebody that brought you, find somebody that is a leader here. And leaders, all I want you to do is just say, hey, is there anything I can pray for you? And it might be just for the group. There might be something specific. If there's nothing specific, don't say anything. It's totally okay. But I'm just going to ask the leaders to pray for you guys as we go into this semester, to just take this moment and to focus our hearts and our minds. And if you're just journeying, let me say this. It's okay. You're welcome here. We love people on the journey. Either case, it's about following the answer. The way that we find our answer is by journeying and following after Jesus. Whether we have accepted him as our Lord or not, journeying after him is how we discover the beauty and the joy and the peace of a God who is proclaiming that he is pursuing after us. And some of you guys have already been experiencing God's pursuit. Some of you guys know, I mean, yeah, people are out there hanging out, meeting people. But some of you guys know that person that you met randomly on the IM fields was more than just a chance encounter. Some of you guys know that person that sat down next to you and just started talking with you over lunch was more than just a chance encounter. Some of you guys just know God is pursuing you in other ways. Some of you guys know that God is there and that you are at a place of needing to get right with God. Let me tell you, no better day than today. Let's start the year right. Let's start this semester right. And let's pursue after a God who has proclaimed freedom to the lost and the hurting, the dying and the suffering, and new life, fulfillment, as only a God who said, I made you. And so I know where to give you that joy. So let's get together and just, like I said, not long, but small group leaders, I just want you to get around. If you don't, you came with like your girlfriend, that's fine, just stay together. Like, if you're like, I don't know any leaders here, just go with somebody, but just get into little groups around. And small group leaders, I just want you, again, hey, is there anything that I could pray for you about? And if there's nothing, that's okay. But if there isn't anything else, then just pray for this year. Just lead us in a moment of ministry to each other. Say, hey, God, may you be the king of our community. May you be the king of our lives. And may we journey to discover what it means to find our fulfillment in you. Okay? We're going to do one last song here in a minute. And then if the ice cream hasn't melted, we'll do a little of that too. Yeah. All right. All right, break up.